We thank everybody for coming on February 25th, 2012, as we study and go through some of the question and answers for some of the homeworks on homework number 35. We're going to take a look at the questions, and we're going to start with the first one. The first question is, what happened in the 1500s or in the 16th century? All right, you can answer it there, Catherine. Explain your...
Explain that.
Your solutions.
Mine is just saying something different. Hold up. This is homework 35.
Yep. Of 35. Yep. The other one would start off with what happened at 4000 BC.
Yeah, wait a minute. I was looking at the wrong. I had 34.
Mm-hmm.
That I had for the first hour.
And the reason why I wanted to go through the first into the second is because they build on each other.
Okay.
And it's always good to get the questions as they develop and build on each other.
Yeah, well, that's smart, you know, building the foundation. Gotta have a foundation. Amen.
Mm-hmm. Let me know when you find the first hour. Okay. As you're looking for it, I'm going to continue on. Okay.
Okay.
In the 1500s, or what we call the 16th century, we're talking about 16th century starting at 1500 to 1599, all the way up to 1600.
Sorry. Go ahead, Professor.
Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the 16th century or the 1500s, inside of the book on people of color in the Bible, we find out that in the 19th century, we find out that the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. Now, not many people, everybody doesn't know what the Dead Sea Scrolls are, but the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. And on page number 9 in the book, People of Color in the Bible, Preliminaries Establishing a Foundation. In the last paragraph, it reads, the rise of Western culture during the 16th century caused most books, relics, icons, and other religious artifacts in support of Africans' contribution to the formation of Judaism and Christianity to be either destroyed or placed in dungeons throughout Europe and parts of Asia. So we see here, it lets us know that the rise of the Western culture during the 1500s or the 16th century, for them to rise, they had to put down someone else, it seems like. And so what they did was that they removed most books and relics and icons that and other religious artifacts as it relates to Africans' contributions to the formation of Judaism. Now, the formation of Judaism is that they bring Judaism to what they would call Abraham. That's what they would say. And what we have today, what we call the European Jews, who are now in Israel, they say that that's their land. And so we have this big fight today over the straits of Jordan, of over there in Gaza, and Israel and Palestine and those areas. That's what we call them today. In the Old Testament, they were called the land of Canaan, also, which would refer to, if it's the land of Canaan, these are the land of the Canaanites, where the Canaanites dwelt, the sons of Ham. And so also we have in that particular area the Philistines, which is the area that they talk about today as Palestine, named after the Philistines. And when we look at those specific areas, they find that the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in that area. That's where that they called these people that they were Essenes. That's what they were called.
They were called, excuse me?
Essenes. E-S-S-E-N-C-E. I believe that's how it's pronounced. I mean, that's how it's spelled.
Okay.
Now,
Thank you. There were
many different sects at the time of the Messiah. We had the Pharisees. We had the Sadducees. We had the Herodians. We had the Zealots. And then we had the people who followed Yeshua. And they didn't use the word Christians. The word that they were called by Paul and the people who attacked Paul and them, they were called the people of the way or the sect of the Nazarene. So those are two things that you need to jot down. That at that particular time, matter of fact, you will hear about Pharisees, Sadducees, Herodians, and Zealots in the New Testament. But in the Old Testament, you don't hear of those terms. Also, in the Old Testament and the New Testament, you don't hear of the Essenes, as it's pronounced, and as I mentioned to you, those who wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. Those were what people would call scribes, who spent their time in the caves writing and translating the Old Testament so that people can be able to read it.
The Sadducees?
No, the Essenes did that.
Oh, the Essenes.
Right, the Essenes. And the Essenes, like I mentioned, are not mentioned in the Old or the New Testament. They're not mentioned at all in the books that we have. But they were the ones at the time of the Messiah, and when we talk about the Dead Sea Scrolls, those are the ones who were writing it. They were scribes, not Pharisees. Now, when we talk about a scribe is just someone who writes words and letters and so forth. That's what they call it, inscriptions, or that's why they're called scribes. I know a friend of mine who lives in Philadelphia. He's a scribe. And so he sits around translating and rewriting old scrolls and fixing them.
Mm.
That's what he does. He's an ascetic Jew, they call him. So with this group of people, so that's what a scribe is. A Pharisee and a Sadducee were more like the religious leaders, like we have in our churches today, bishops, pastors, people who call themselves apostles, and whatever other terms they use. Some call conference leaders, and so forth. And so those would what they would call Pharisees and Sadducees. And there's two groups. The Pharisees believed one thing, and the Sadducees believed another. So those were the two main influential groups that lived at the time of the Messiah. One teaching of the scribes, I mean not the scribes, the scribes did not have a political agenda. The scribes just translated books. They were just like writers, scholars. But the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they were political leaders, politics. They were politicians in the religious world. And so you would either you would follow the Pharisees or you would follow the Sadducees' ideology. Now, Paul, who grew up, he says that he was a Pharisee of the Pharisees. So he was a Pharisee. That's how he grew up. And you have also, and then the Sadducees, one was more stricter to the laws, and others were, I think, a little liberal on certain areas. And I think that's where you have the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And I think a lot of people said a lot of people followed the Pharisees because the Sadducees, they were more into reading and trying to get into the not understanding, but talking about the particular words and what they meant and stuff like that. The Pharisees made things, I think, a little more practical toward people. That's my understanding of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. So now you have an understanding of what a Pharisee is, a Sadducee, and a scribe. Now there's another group that's called the Zealots. All of these terms you'll find in the Bible. A zealot was a person who was, they said he had a lot of zeal. And they would go around, you know, killing or whatever he needed to do that. So that means like Barabbas. I think that some people would classify him as a zealot. So that means that, you know, if you attacked Israel or if you attacked the people, then the zealot group would be an armed group that would go and fight. So sort of like maybe the more militant groups at that time of leaders, of church people. And then I said you had another group, which was the Herodians. I'm not quite sure of what the Herodians believe, but that was the other group. And the Essenes, which is not mentioned, as I said, in the Bible, but they were supposed to, according to Josephus, that they were the true Hebrews. The rest of these guys were, you know, like I said, political appointees by the Roman army, the Pharisees and Sadducees. So they always worked with the Roman Empire. So these were total politicians under the religious guise. Now, my understanding is all of them were not true Hebrews. Now, according to Josephus, the only true Hebrews were Essenes out of all of these groups. And a Hebrew would be of one of the 12 tribes of Israel. So today we have a group of people who call themselves European Jews, but at the same time they can't tell you which tribe they're from and where their lineage goes back to someone in the Bible. So, and they have, you know, the European Jews of today, they have traditions that they teach and they've been practicing for years. The European Jews mainly came into existence around 700 A.D. That's when they came into existence. There's a book called The 13th Tribe. And in that book, it goes into detail of how they came into existence. Now, we talked a little bit before about the Crusades. Did you remember what the Crusades are? You were going to look that up?
I'm sorry, the Crusades?
Yes.
I think that's one I didn't answer.
Okay. The Crusades are a group. There was what they called the Crusades Wars. Okay, the Crusades would go forth and they would be the army for the church, basically. And so
they were the army for the church?
Yes. Mm-hmm. The arm of the church, the militant, their military. And so they would go forth into different lands to get people to convert to Christianity, as they called it in that days. Okay, and so if you didn't convert, then you died. Simple as that. That's how it was. At the same time that they were going on, then they were coming from Europe, so they were coming from the West. That's the Western world. Then you had another group coming from the East, from the Arab world, and they were bringing on Islam. And Islam said that if you didn't join Islam, then you would die. Okay, so they were killing off people. And so you had these wars and these clashes such that the Crusades said that they were fighting, you know, the infidels, and converting people over to their way of living and lifestyle versus the Islamic one, which is an Arab base. Now, many people think because many countries in Africa are Islamic or have many people who follow the Islamic religion that they're trying to compare the Africans with Islam as if Islam is an African religion. As I mentioned, Islam is from Arabs, so it's an Arab religion. It is not an African religion. It has nothing to do with Africans. Matter of fact, it was the same teaching that when they came in from the east coast into Africa, they would tell you that if you didn't convert, then they would kill you. And so many tribes, and that's how they would sweep through Africa and made nations become Islamic.
So Islam was a crusade also?
They were a war. They would not call it. The Crusades was just the Christian crusade. The Islamic, I guess they call that the jihad. That's what we hear about today, people talking about jihad.
Uh-huh.
So that's what they call theirs. But both are wars, wars of converting and killing. You have to convert or you die, simple as that. So when they came in on the East Coast and the Catholic Church and the Roman Empire, and when you talk about the Christian world, they came in from the West. So you had both groups pushing on the Africans. You either converted into Islam, and those that were coming from the Arabs, or you converted over to Christianity, which was coming from the West under the Crusades. And so Africa was in a struggle in between the both of them and they were wiping out all evidence of Hebrews who lived in Africa. See, you know, most people don't know that. But if you read the Bible, let's ask some basic questions. When we read about the Bible, where was the Garden of Eden?
The Garden of Eden in the land of Ham.
Okay. What world is that today? What continent are we talking about?
Africa.
Okay, right. Eastward in Eden or Eastern in Africa. That is correct. Okay, so people have basically wiped that out of the teachings of today. So if you ask somebody, where was the Garden of Eden, you know where most people will tell you it is?
No.
In Iran and Iraq. They'll tell you in the Middle East. They'll tell you in Mesopotamia. Mm-hmm. All of those terms are meaning the same.
Yeah.
But before World War II, all of that area was considered Northeast Africa. But after World War II, they had to change it to the Middle East so that they could justify bringing in Europeans into Northeast Africa and then say that that's their land. It's just like the whites who've come into South Africa, and because they like the gold there, they want to stay.
Wow.
And they call themselves Afrikaners. Same thing, colonists coming in and taking over. So what we find out was that today that people, even though there's archaeological findings, fossils, DNA, all of these different things proving that the Africans were the first people on the planet, people will still use the scripture to justify that, no, that's not true, that the first, the Garden of Eden was in, that surrounded the land of Euphrates and Tigris River. Now, the Bible talks about four rivers instead of two. Now, the order of the rivers that Yahweh talks about is what they called Pison, which is what I believe is down in the African Great Lake region, which is in the Horn of Africa, which is the first river. The second river is what the Bible refers to as Gihon, which is the Nile River, which flows north up into, it surrounds the whole land of Cush, or the burnt-faced people. That's how the Bible describes it. And then the third river is what they call the Tigris, and the fourth river is the Euphrates. And so what we have is that these last two rivers are superseding the four rivers, and that's why people say that these two rivers is where the Garden of Eden was versus in the heart of Africa of where its origin began. So even today, we still have people covering it up, trying to use scripture to explain it away. So if you start there, then when you move forward, if Adam and Eve were Africans, then so was Noah and his son. So all of the people in the old, all the way up to that time were Africans, or as I refer to them, as Nubians. Now, they have what we call Nubians over in Africa today, over in the land of Sudan and Ethiopia. And these Nubians consider themselves to be the first people on the planet. Sometimes we refer to these Nubians as Ethiopians. When the Europeans came through, they said that you're no longer Cushites and Nubians. We're going to call you Ethiopians, burnt-faced people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then, so with this group of people here, when they change the name, then it help you to dislocate who these people really were. And so when we move forward, as we look at these people who started in Africa, they're African Nubian Cushites. That's what I refer to them as. African, because they're in the continent of Africa, what we call today. Nubians, because that's what the original people were. They were Nubians. And then Cushite and Ethiopian is because that's the names that the European has given them, as Ethiopians. And the Bible refers to them as Cushites. So depending on which literature you're reading and where you're reading, you will come across three or four different names. Nubians, Africans, Cushites, Ethiopians are all referring to the same people. So sometimes I use those words interchangeably so that everybody might be able to see what's going on. So as we can see that we've lost touch there, so that when Noah had three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, people say that, you know, that he had three races. He had an African, a white man, and a Chinese. Now, that's not physically possible, number one. And so, but they say God can do anything. So, but that's not what God did. God had nothing to do with that. They were all Africans, and because they were all Africans, the people who are commenting on the Bible don't want to say that. That he had three. If it's him, if Adam and Eve are Africans, everybody before them were Africans, so by the time you get to Noah marries an African, all his children are African. But to cover that up, like we were reading here, in the 16th century, the Westerns covering up all contributions to Africa in the formation of Judaism. You see, the formation of the Bible, in the formation of Hebrews, Israelites, and those type of things. And so that's when they refer to Judaism. Now, Judaism is a religion, not a race of people. But today they would have you think that the European Jews are the same people in the Bible as it refers to as Hebrew and Israelites, which they aren't because they were African and these people are European, so they can't be the same people. So to supersede that, what they would do is say that, okay, we had Noah had three sons, and through his three sons, one of them was white, one of them was Chinese, and one of them was African. And then they go smoothly through it and then say that Shem was eventually Shem. Through Shem, you have what you called Heber, which is the Hebrews, which was the first Hebrew, Heber. The Bible spell it E-B-E-R or H-E-B-E-R. Sometimes in the new translation, they'll add that H so that you can know it's Heber. And on the King James, they drop the H in the beginning so that you won't know that Heber has nothing to do with Eber. And the Bible talks about that Abraham is the first Hebrew. I mean, is a Hebrew. It's called him Abraham the Hebrew.
So, Professor, you're saying this is the Eurocentric view, that Shem was the first Hebrew?
No. But Heber was the first Hebrew. See, they have, you have to name it after somebody. They name the lands after themselves. They name people after themselves. So, like, if you are a Cush, if you were born in the lineage of Cush, then you would be a what? Cushite, right?
Yeah.
Okay, if your daddy was Cain, and what would your descendants be? Canaanites.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we read in the Bible. We talk about, the Bible talks about the Canaanites. And the same thing, it just continues on in that realm. So the same thing as what we would talk about today in reference to, we have the to Hebrews. That means you had to find somebody who was the first Hebrew, who was Heber. Heber and Hebrew are The only difference in the spelling is Heber is H-E-B-E-R. Did you write that down?
Yes.
Okay. Now, in Hebrew, how was that spelled? H-E-B-R-E-W.
Uh-huh.
What's the difference between those two words? How many letters differences are there?
The W.
That's it. One letter. And mm-hmm. so that's why I was saying Heber or Eber, depending on which translation you're reading from, that that was the first Hebrew. And through that lineage, you will find Abraham comes through, and that's why he's called Abraham the Hebrew. Okay, does that help clarify what you are waiting
yes,
for?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, no problem. Now, they did come from the line of Shem, from Noah's sons. That is correct. But now, once you move into that, then people say that Abraham, who's the father of the faithful, Abraham was the first, some will say that it was the first Hebrew, not knowing what they're saying, that the Hebrew, that for him to be a Hebrew, he had to come from Heber. Okay, so that's just people I would say. Now, then they try to imply that Abraham was a Jew. He wasn't a Jew because there was no such thing as Judaism. Okay, there was no Jew. But that's what they would have you believe. And we already found out that the Hebrew is a dialect and not a language, but it's a dialect that comes from the Canaanite language. And so the Canaanite language is an African language because the Canaanites came from Canaan, and Canaan was the son of Ham. Simple as that. It's not complicated. So you have Ham. Then you have Canaan, and from Canaan you have all of his different children. And so the same thing with Abraham. Abraham had Isaac, and Isaac had Jacob and Esau, and Jacob and Jacob's name was eventually changed to Israel, and he had 12 sons. And the 12 sons he had became the 12 tribes of Israel. That makes sense?
Yes.
Okay. So they try to say that they want to make all of these Hebrews on all of these 12 tribes of Israel all European Jews and try to make them white so that it can be portrayed in your mind that this is a white book. And that they're teaching, you know, that type of thing. But as we know, that can't be true. Simply due to one fact that Abraham and the people before him were all Africans. And they referred to Abraham as Abraham from Ur of the Chaldees. Now, Ur was a city in the land off what we call today the Middle East area. And in that particular area where he dwelt, Ur was a central location for the Nubians, Cushites, Ethiopians. And so when you read the Bible in the book of Daniel, you'll find out that the Babylonians, that they had Daniel and his three Hebrew companions, Mishael, Azariah, and Hananiah. Now, we know them as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's their Babylonian names. But their Hebrew names, as we had mentioned, Azariah, Ananiah, and Hananiah, Daniel's companions, that they were all taught the learning of the Chaldees. And that's why the Bible told us that Abraham came from Ur of the Chaldees. So these Chaldeans were, again, Nubian, Cushites, Ethiopian type people, and they were running Babylon. One of them, so when we have that lineage there linked we have that lineage link back to the Chaldeans, then Abraham was under the under a Chaldean area, learned the Chaldean language and arts and everything else that went with the Chaldeans. The Chaldeans were a very smart group of people, but like I said, they were Africans, Cushite Ethiopians. That's basically what they were. So he's living in their region, and what we find out that we had, like I said, Abraham had Isaac. Abraham also had Ishmael through Hannah, the Egyptian handmaiden. So the handmaidens were black African handmaidens. This one in particular was an Egyptian. And then you had Abraham, Isaac, and then you had Jacob. And Isaac had a set of twins, which was Jacob and Esau. And Jacob had four wives. He had Leah, who he was tricked into. He loved Rachel. He married her after he married Leah. And when Rachel couldn't have children, Rachel told Jacob to go into her handmaidens, which was Bilhah. And as he went to her handmaiden, he had two children by her. And then when Leah saw that she stopped bearing, because she had six children, when she stopped bearing after four, she told Jacob to go into her handmaidens, which was Zilpah, and he had two children by Zilpah. Now, all of the handmaidens were either Ethiopian, Egyptian, or Canaanite, because those are the only people that lived in that land. None of them could have been European. But the Bible doesn't mention anything about the Europeans until we come to the New Testament. So this is all ancient history prior to the Exodus and so forth. And so when you're reading through this, if they replace Abraham with Judaism and then put the European Jews in there you can see that they're wiping over or hiding or destroying the contributions that Africans had to the Bible. And that's what they were saying. That's what was going on in the 16th century. That's what they said they were mainly doing. They were just wiping everything out that related to us. So when you get to the into Egypt, because you had Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Jacob's 12 sons, and we find out that Joseph was one of them, and Joseph brought him, his dad, and all his brothers into Egypt and all of their people. And the Bible says there was around 70 of them. Now remember, these 70 were the 12 tribes of Israel, or the 12 sons of Israel. And we already talked about two of his handmaidens, each one of them having two children, that's four children. So out of the 12, you already have four or one-third of them who are what we would call African Hebrew Israelites, because they were Hebrews because of Abraham. They were Israelites because Jacob's name was changed to Israel and all of his sons were Israelites. And because they married Africans who were either Egyptians or Ethiopian or Canaanites, then that's how we can classify them as African Hebrews and Israelites. Now, other people would like to say that they were nothing but Jews, but they couldn't have been nothing but Jews because there was no such thing as Judaism at that time as we have it today. And so some Jews who teach Judaism, they teach that the Old Testament, that the language that was spoken in the Garden of Eden was Hebrew, and that's nonsense. How could you have a Hebrew language when you didn't even have a person who was named Hebrew yet? But these are all traditions of hiding and covering up the African contribution because they know that in the Garden of Eden they had to speak an African language because they were African people. So you can see the contributions as it leads to Judaism, as Judaism starts to prepare. So when they go into Egypt as 70, most of them have, there's only 12 sons who are Hebrew Israelites. And out of those 12 sons, we know there's only 8 of them because the other 4 had married, Jacob had married African Hebrew And so their children were Africans and Hebrews together. So that's why we call them African Hebrew, African Hebrew Israelites. Then when they come in at 70, we find out during the time of the Exodus that they leave, and it's around 3 million of them. And the only people that are living in Egypt are Egyptians, Ethiopians, and Canaanites still. So these 70 intermarry with these groups of people, and now we see that they're getting darker than ever. And they are Africans, Hebrew, Israelites. And so today, they would, Europeans would keep calling them Jews, but there were no Jews at this point because there was no such thing as Judaism. And Judaism is a religion, and that's all it is. These were all people who served Yahweh, and you won't find it, none of that. You won't find until after the time of Babylon, the Medo-Persian Empire, that this word Jew comes into existence. So there were no Jews at this time, so there could not have been any European Jews. So these were all African Hebrew Israelites that were living at the time of the Exodus. And that's why the Bible calls it a mixed multitude. So these are the type of things that they've just been covering and covering and covering to make sure that no one would see how the Africans are intricately tied to what we call the African Hebrew Israelites of the Old Testament. So when we get to the, when they talk about in reference to Christianity, we know that Christianity came out from the Messiah and his disciples. And so people try to define on what was Yeshua and his, well, he was a Hebrew and he was an Israelite. So he was of the lineage of the people of the Old Testament. He had to be an African Hebrew Israelite. That's as simple as that. They didn't marry, that the Europeans who had not accepted this truth yet. Remember, the first 2,000 years from 4,000 B.C. to 2,000 B.C., who worshipped Yahweh and knew about Yahweh? You remember? We studied that a few weeks ago.
From 4,000 B.C. to 2,000 B.C.?
Yes.
You mean 2,000 A.C.?
4,000 B.C. to 2,000 B.C.
2,000 B.C.
Say that again?
You said from 4,000 B.C. to 2,000 B.C.?
Yes, for 2,000 years, yes. The first 2,000 years.
Oh, the first 2,000 years, who worship?
Yahweh.
The first 2,000 years, it was Adam and Eve and all of their ascendants. And it's after them.
And what was their race?
They were Ethiopians, the Cushites.
Okay, so basically they were Africans. Yes, correct. So the
Africans, yeah,
Africans were the people that Yahweh introduced to them because that's what Adam and Eve was. So then when Adam and Eve fell and other people fell after that time, then Yahweh changed over and said, okay, around 2000 B.C., he's now going to bring into accepting him and learning about him would be the Hebrews. And that's where Abraham comes into existence. And so from Abraham till around 0 B.C. to the death of the Messiah, Yahweh was using the Hebrews at that time, or the Israelites, or the African Hebrew Israelites. And so for that next 2,000 years, from 2000 B.C. to 0 B.C. A.D., we have Yahweh introducing the Hebrews, Israelites to him. And so now you have a group of Africans who knew him, and then they joining in with this new group of Hebrew Israelites. So that's how you have African Hebrew Israelites who were worshiping Yahweh during that time frame. Now the last group of people was after the death of Christ or around the time of the Messiah. Then we had another group of people that existed and was been worshiping Yahweh since around 0 B.C. to today. Do you know who they are?
0 B.C. to today, the last group that were worshiping?
Yes.
It would be the Eurocentric, right?
The Europeans.
European, yes.
Right. And so then that's when Cornelius and the rest of them are introduced to Yahweh and so forth. So now the Bible says, Paul says, that I turn to the Gentiles. So Yahweh now is introducing for the last 2,000 years, from around 0 to today, 2000 B.C., 2000 AD, 2012 or so, that we have now this last group being introduced to Yahweh. And so we have three different groups at three different times. And so when you study anything, they always usually try to leave out anything before Abraham because they know that these were the Africans who worshipped and developed the religion of Yahweh.
You said that the Europeans, they were worshiping during 0 BC to now.
Okay, AD and BC 0 is the same point.
Okay.
Okay, so when it's talking about here that they placed these things in dungeons and hid them in Asia, on page 10 of our book, that's what it's referring to, all of these different things that we just talked about. Okay, so did you find your questions?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, good. Okay. All right, so now we're, okay, so what were the areas that happened in the 1500s?
What happened in the 14th and 1500s?
Not 14th. 1500s or the 16th century?
Well,
and
the 15th.
Right up to it, yes.
My first question, you mean?
Yes.
It was the Bible at that time was commentary was written, and the last Moors were defected, ran out
okay,
of Europe.
Okay, one at a time. What dates are we talking?
Well, 1500, the Moors were ran out in the 1500s. And 1611, authorized King James Version of the Bible was written. I don't have the date for the Bible commentary was written.
Okay, the Bible commentaries were written around the early 1500s. Right after 1492, when the last Moor was kicked out of Spain and Portugal, when they lost their last battle. So when the Moors lost their last battle, then they could rewrite history, and they started right around the 1500s.
Okay.
And that's why I was telling you that on page 9 it says, as I quote, it says, the rise of Western civilization during the 16th century caused most books, relics, and icons. So basically what happened during the 1600s, they destroyed everything that related to African contributions to anything in the Bible. And then
yes.
If they moved those, what did they replace them with? So then that's when they had to counterfeit and write their Bible commentaries at that time frame. And ever since then, they've been writing them even to today. Most of the books that you read are by Europeans. Most of the doctrines that we're taught are from Europeans. It's their doctrine and their ideology, and that's why it's called Eurocentric. It's centered around Europe, even though they're not even talked about in the Old Testament at all. But they say that they are there because they're the descendants of Abraham and Judaism and all of that type of stuff. So, okay, so you have the 1492, the last Moor was defeated in Europe, and when they defeated
yes.
the last Moor, what happens with history? Then they can rewrite history, right?
Yeah.
And take you out of it. And that's what they did. And then, as you said, what happened in the next dates after that, in the 1600s?
1611, the authorized King James Version of the Bible was written.
That is correct. So in 1611, 100 years after the 16th century began, as they started the 17th century, they started authorizing of whose authority and whose stuff you should read and whose stuff you shouldn't read. So then they just blackballed anybody else's stuff. That was the bottom line. So they said, this is the truth, and this is the only thing you read. You don't read nobody else's stuff. Otherwise,
right.
You'd be called the heretic. Okay, so those were what was going on. Okay. Now, what? And question number two, what happened in 1492? I think you answered that already.
What I put, what happened in 1492 was the authorized...
Right. Okay, what did you tell me before happened in 1492? What's part B of...
You talking about where everything was destroyed in 1492?
I'm asking, under the first question, you have an A, B, C, D. What is number B? B tells us what happened in 1492.
Oh, I have the last Moors were defeated, ran out of Europe.
Yes. Okay, so that's the answer for number two. Not the authorized sanctions. Okay, yes, the authorized sanctions scholars, but you have down here 1942.
For the authorized sanction, I had, on my paper, I had 1611. I put the wrong year.
Yeah, what year do you have down there?
On my paper, I have 1611.
Okay, I'm talking about question two.
1611
is correct.
I have 1942.
Right, that's why I said, is it 1942? The question asks you what happened in 1492.
Oh, I got the wrong year.
Yeah, not 1942.
I'm sorry.
No problem. I'm just letting you see so you can correct that.
Correcting that now.
So what happened in 1492 to answer the question A, the question two, is what you wrote in part B of question one, right?
Yes.
The Moors. Okay, so that's what I thought you would, that's the answer to that question.
Would be the Moors.
Yeah, because that's what happened in 1492. The last Moor was what?
Was ran out of York.
Right, was defeated. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, then number three is, who are the Moors?
They were the first black civilization.
Okay, no, I would not say first civilization. I see you have down here page 10 of the book.
Yeah.
The Moors wasn't the first civilization, because we're talking about what time they ruled Europe, Spain, and Portugal in between there around 700 A.D. Remember the A.D. part, right? So we were talking about civilizations and worshiping of Yahweh and all of that stuff way back at, 4,000, 2,000 B.C., right?
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't have been the first. Because they're on the AD side, right?
Okay, yes.
Okay, so yes. Okay, so that's what, so Moor couldn't have been the first black civilization, because the first black civilization was Adam and Eve, right?
Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Right.
So the Moors would be just black Africans.
Right. That is correct. That's all they are. And the word Moor means black. That's what it means. So that's why the Europeans called them Moors, because they were black. Now, many people will tell you that the Moors were Muslim and it was a religion, and it is not true. Moor just means black. It does not mean, has anything to do with your religion. And you're going to find out later that that there was many people who were named, different people who were named as Africans, who were Christian saints, Moor saints. So you can't be a Moor saint if you're Islamic, right?
Right.
Right. And so what I wanted you to do was type in Moors in the Bible, in the Google, and you can find out, you can ask for more saints, Moorish saints, or Moor saints. And if you type that in, then you'll see in the Catholic Church and other organizations, they have listed lots of black Moors who were saints.
So type in Moors,
right.
And the word saint.
Right, saints, right. in your Google search, and it should come up with different types of Moors that were black and who were saints by the church.
Okay.
Okay, so that'll help you get a broader understanding of Moors. But I want you all to get a clearer insight when you talk with people of who a Moor is and what is he is or what he is not. And then we had what, then in number four, what were the Crusades and the Crusades War about? And I wanted you to look up Crusades also in Google and the Crusades War in Google. And then that would help you get a better understanding. We talked about it, and I talked about it earlier today, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But I want you to get a clearer insight so that when you talk with people, that, you know, because that's a very important group of time frame, the Crusades. That was a very important time frame in history. Okay, now that I explained to you earlier what the Crusades are and the Crusades War, can you answer that question a little clearer?
Yes, you said that the Crusades, they were out, their whole mission was to go out and to recruit Christians, people to convert into Christianity. And they were...
And if you didn't convert, what happened?
They would kill you. They were killers also.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, yes, so you need to read up on that so you can get a better understanding. And that was from the church, yes. These were the church wars, basically. Now, number five, you ready for number five?
Yes.
Stop from four.
Number five.
Okay, number five. Is Islam the original religion of Africa?
And I believe I have a page number with that, and I put no. They believe in Christianity and Judaism. And I think...
Okay.
That's
what
I got out of the book.
Right. Well, basically, we have to look at that. But basically, all I was just trying to see is to let you know when people tell you that Islam is an African religion, you can tell them no, because remember I mentioned earlier whose religion was the Arab? The Arab's religion was who? Islam, right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's really the answer. The Islam is the original Arab religion, not African religion. Islam has nothing to do with African religion. It was just forced on the Africans. That's all it was. And I wanted you to, you know, realize that. That's the answer to basically to that question.
Mm-hmm. I had it halfway right. I said no. But
right, you did say no. Yep, that is correct. Okay, so now you can clear up the other side.
Yes, the Arab religion was Islam. They were Islam. That was their religion. And the Africans were forced into that religion.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. And then number six, can you please list a few more or Moorish saints in history? This is where I wanted you to go into Google and find that. Now, you did mention here Ham, but remember, the Moors only basically came into existence in 700 A.D., and we're talking about Ham in around, 3000 B.C. The same thing with Edomilch, the Egyptian, the Ethiopian, and Jeremiah. That's still in the B.C. So a Moor is a little different than that. That's why I said you have to look that up in a Google search, okay?
You wanted to know the name of some Moors, right?
No. Yeah,
that's
I wanted it. To know what, but I need them to be Christian Moor saints. And that's why I said you would have to look up, if you type in into the Google search, more saints, and then you'll come up with a list. I mentioned that earlier.
So the ones that I picked wasn't, I had Ham and Abimelech, so I didn't pick the right one.
All of these were before Moors. Remember, the Moors came into existence around 700 A.D. You're talking about 3000 B.C.
Oh, okay.
You see the difference? You're talking about way before. And then when you talk about the one in Jeremiah, that's around maybe 35, 40, or 50. All of those are B.C.s. Okay, so Moors didn't come into existence until the Europeans met them. And remember, in the Old Testament, the Europeans didn't exist.
Okay.
So the Moors were only a word that was created not by themselves, not by Africans. This was a word that was created by Europeans to name black people, and they called them Moors. And so it'll have to be back in the A.D. later on. Around 700 A.D. that you find these Moors. And that's why I said you look it up in the Google search and you'll find it. They'll just list you a few of them and you can, you know, look at them and see. Okay, does that help you there?
Yes, Professor, thank you.
Okay, now number 7, it says, what was the Dark Ages of Europe?
It was a time of ignorance and lack of knowledge. And I didn't get a chance to go in because I know you had told us to go into the Google and get a little more information on that. But what I have in here is from my notes. And I remember you were discussing that it was a time of ignorance that they were in and a lack of knowledge.
Yes, that is correct. Right. Mm-hmm. I just wanted you to just get a better feel of the Dark Ages because all of these things is the next question is how did they come out of the Dark Ages if they were in ignorance?
Okay. And that one I didn't answer.
Right. And that's why I wanted you to look up in the Dark Ages. And I think I mentioned to you, to the group, that they came out of it through the Moors. The Moors is the ones who brought them technology and brought them knowledge. And so they were moved out of the ignorance through the Moors, and that's how they came out.
Their teaching or something?
Yeah, they brought in science. They brought in sanitation. They brought in 3 meals a day. They brought in baths. They brought in science. They brought in libraries. They brought in light. They brought in colleges, universities. So, and mathematics, that's what the Europeans, that's what the Moors brought to the Europeans and brought them out of the Dark Ages. They say is that they came into the age of enlightenment. That's how they would describe it.
You're saying Moors and Europeans together.
Say that again.
I hear you saying Moors and European together. I'm hearing you say that.
Yes, the European. Remember, the Moors lived over in Spain and Portugal from 700 BC to 1492. So during that time frame, they brought into Europe science, technology, schools, universities, sanitation. I mean, you name it, all the stuff that we have in modern Western world, the Moors gave to the Europeans. That's how they got out of the Dark Ages.
Hmm.
Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
If they were in ignorance, somebody else has to bring you out of ignorance, right?
Yes.
And that's who did it. Okay, so does that help you understand that answer to that question?
Yes, it did, Professor. Thank you.
No problem. Okay, we've been on for around an hour, and what I'm going to do is It's around 3 now. We'll get back together at 3:15 because I want to save this recording so that next week or whenever people want to, they can, you know, purchase them, you know, any of these sessions, and they can listen to them and catch up with us. Okay?
Yes.
3:15. Okay, yeah, we'll come back in 3:15.
Thank you.